never go to a farm that is growing pellets.
Right.
Right? So it's got to be changed into that.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
Gotcha.
And then you're like, crap, why am I even wearing a glove now?
Inside your glove.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think everyone on the planet has disappeared.
Yeah, I haven't seen one in years. All right, welcome back to the Appalachian Farmcast. This is Tyler Rice from Pike Mountain Farm with
Cody Brabham from Winnow Glen Farm,
and we're gonna turn Cody loose today on one of his favorite subjects. I think we're gonna talk about lambing. So
yeah, I got a couple opinions on that, and So we're just wrapping it up. If you haven't heard any of the previous couple episodes, we're winding down with our, I guess it'd be considered springtime lambing, that this season, it just drug out entirely too long. And it all kind of started when I'd brought in a ram to get some genetics that I'd really been trying to get a hold of for a while. Brought him in, and he... Long story short, sperm count was low, and you could kind of see a visual indicator of that in his baggage.
That's one way to put it, I guess.
But it was kind of one of those deals that it's your last chance to get a hold of a dying genetic, literally.
And does the fact that he had that issue make you a little... leery of his genetic, or was it age related, you think? Or
I think it was injury related.
Okay.
I've got pictures of that ram from previous breeding seasons where
he didn't have that look.
He was very much correct.
Okay. I got you.
I can say it without getting too graphic. So on a ram's back end, There's some fortitude going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's impressive.
They're proud. And typically, a healthy sack of a ram would look like a teardrop shape.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and when he came in and came through quarantine and everything, his was more like I compare it to a piece of a 2x4 hanging. It just didn't look right. But he'd passed, you know, he passed his bio screen, he passed a BOVIS test, all that stuff. I did not do the full BSE, which would be like the breeding soundness exam, to do a sperm count, because the Katahdin breed is not known for fertility issues. So I think it's just an instance where the farm he came in from, he was housed, as I do with my rams, he was housed there with, upwards of probably 10 other rams.
Okay.
During the off season. And whether it's maybe he was laying down and got stepped on.
Oh, yeah.
Or headbutting amongst rams, he got butted. There was an issue there that kind of caused it to look a little different and therefore function a bit different. And the first indicator that there was a problem, other than the visual, was, so he went to work right away and marked these ewes. I think there were 12 or 13 in his group. And as I've told you, and the listeners have heard, but anybody new, my rams wear a breeding harness during breeding season with a crayon on their chest plate. So I can go at the end of the day and check to see who got bred, make a note of it, and keep track of it in my lambing book so I know when lambs are coming. So with sheep, if a ewe stands for a ram and gets bred and it takes, typically speaking, they will not stand for just leisurely markings in the future.
Gotcha. Yeah.
On the next cycle. But, you know, after that cycle went through, I thought, boy, so I don't drag this out too far into the springtime, I'll just go ahead and pull him after one cycle, which is 17 days. and put my backup RAM in. Well, I did that, and that RAM started marking right away, one or two here and there, and I thought, okay, maybe it's still all right. I think 9 out of 12 ewes rebred.
Okay.
So, yeah, that genetic that I was fearful, you know, and super glad to get a hold of, I think I ended up with a pair of triplets, a pair of twins, and a single. So I've got 6 lambs out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, somebody asked me if I would be willing to, you know, am I going to hold on to those ewe lambs? Am I going to hold on to any of the ram lambs? If I'm worried about, and I, like I said, I think it's injury, so I don't think there's any sense of being worried about it passing on. So I'll probably keep all the ewe lambs out of it.
Okay.
So anyway, you turn rams in. A ewe cycle is about 17 days. So I typically leave rams in for 2 cycles plus just a couple days. And that lets me, historically, I wrap lambing up in 22 days is what I average. Because everybody's usually really good about catching on that first cycle. And then the average sheep gestation, they're carrying a lamb for about 5 months, just short of 5 months. It's on average about 147 days. I think mm-hmm. mine are about 150.
Okay.
And I guess it goes to say, well, you're in trouble today, because this is like Cody's got free reign to just sheep and nerd out. This would be the talk where Ron's just sitting there like, yeah.
It's a good thing he's at work right now at his other job that he took. Yeah.
Yeah.
It pays better than this.
No doubt. No doubt. So prior to, even turning a ram in, I guess I should say, you want to have your ewes on what would be considered an increased plane of nutrition.
Is that what they call flushing?
Yeah. So whether it's flushing your ewe with a, you can do it with feed. A lot of people just use shelled corn.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the cheaper ways to go about it. The cheapest way is if you've got a paddock of grass that you've been saving that's exceptionally good.
Mm.
You know, flush them on a really high ration of that, or a really good paddock of grass. I've done a bit of both. This past season, it was more saving the best paddock. I didn't really do a full-on flush ration, but when I do, you do it about 2 weeks before you plan on putting a ram in. That's what I've done. And
okay.
Give them about 0.5 pound a head a day. So you're just trying to basically, I don't want to say trick the ewe, but you want, you know, her condition to start building a little bit so that she's ultimately going to have a greater chance of dropping an additional egg okay. at breeding time or two.
Gotcha.
So
she's feeling.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. When we had our meat rabbits off and on for a time, and they're off now, but, we had them hanging up like right on our property line in, well, not all of them, but they were like the breeders were in cages, hanging cages, and the neighbor would walk their dog around and it would like stand there and stare at them. Well, it was only 10 okay. feet away from them.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize this because I was working full time, but like then we kept having problems with losing baby bunnies.
Okay.
And then I was reading in this book that was saying, you know, if they're like, they feel threatened, that they'll kill the babies as to like keep from predators, I guess. Or I don't know. Anyway, I chalked it up to maybe it was the fact that dog was coming by there all the time and they were quite threatened possibly. By that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we just weren't very good at rabbits, but it'd be all the same thing. But it's interesting. Like it's all those little, it's kind of what that guy talked about at the grazing conference with like, these animals have this like ingrained wisdom that we can tap into.
Okay.
And like in this case, use it to trick them into being more fertile. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. You can definitely, I could see where the presence of a predator or something worrying them, and the same with sheep, if they're overly stressed, you know, it can cause them to either not catch or abort or whatever. So Okay, so you've got your ewes flushed. You've turned your rams in. We finish our grazing season out and go into winter, inevitably tap into the hay supply. Somewhere around about a month before lambing, and it's also at the same time I run my ewes, on average 1 month before they start lambing. I run all the ewes back through and they get their CD&T booster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only vaccine we give them. And you do it about a month prior to lambing, and that allows them to give kind of passive immunity to their developing lambs.
Okay.
And then I don't have to do the lambs again until 8 weeks old, I believe. Yeah, because typically, I know in the past when my market lambs have come to your place, they'll get their, so they get their first at 8, and then their follow-up, their booster for full immunity at 11 weeks.
Yeah, it's usually, I mean, it had
and
been
right
after
about
that.
When they're coming to your place. So yeah, you give the ewes that, and that's a good chance. I check their feet real good, see if anybody needs trimmed, because they're, you don't want to be rolling an extremely pregnant ewe, manhandling them too much to correct any feet issues.
You got a great system there for bringing them in, but it's still stressful on them, I'm sure.
Yeah, so that system's it's mainly a Townsend alleyway with a sweep tub, round pin on it, and some guillotine gates, cutting gates and whatnot with a Sidel.
Sounds scary.
Tilt table, yeah. That came
it's
after.
Not as scary in person.
Yeah, yeah. So when I started, of course, there was no equipment, and I remember trying to use netting as a bit of a makeshift, like scare the sheep down this narrowed alley.
Yeah.
Or have someone in the family do that and me be ready to grab an animal and trim feed or something. And that, you know, after you get tackled by a 200-pound ram a couple times, like my mentor said, he goes, listen, you'll just throw something together in the beginning and it'll work. Not great. And you'll get frustrated with it.
Yeah.
He said, then you'll build some stuff and that'll work a little better. And you'll think, well, why didn't I do that in the beginning? He said, you'll use it for a while and stuff will break and you'll want to improve it. And then you'll buy an actual system that's made for the purpose.
And then you realize.
And you'll go, why did I waste any time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and that I followed it to a T.
Yeah.
He was right. So, yeah, so lambs will start hitting the ground while ewes are right about that 1 month, I guess. I start them back on a ration, not a heavy one because you don't want to pump too much feed into them. The last couple few weeks of gestation, lambs grow so much. So it doesn't take too much figuring out to see that big lambs on a animal that's not too big to begin with.
Yeah.
Birthing problems.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Especially with me having each year I run a hefty percentage of first timers that are just themselves about a year old.
Mm-hmm.
Big lambs would be a bad thing. And that's the thing with this breed, and it's not across the board. There are other breeds that do it, but the Katahdins were developed to be a production breed that, I mean, I'm putting 7-8-month-old ewe lambs in with a ram to get bred and have their own lambs at a year old. And it requires a little bit more diligence from the shepherd, the farmer, whatever, at lambing time because, again, the way my mentor told me, he said, Cody, when she's having lambs at 12 or 13 months old, he said it's the equivalent of a 14-year-old girl having a kid.
Gotcha.
He said it's a lot for them to take care of. It's hard on their body. Or not hard, but it's also, it's pulling them down in condition when they themselves are still growing.
Growing, yeah.
So.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, if there was just a magical way of doing it, you would love for your first time ewes to just have a single lamb, and then every time after it, twins would just be super because there's two faucets, and you'd need a lamb on each one of those faucets.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I mean, I guess you could. I mean, could you pull like? I mean, I know with like cattle people, a lot of times we'll keep like first time heifers and stuff. And run them separately from the cows because you got to manage them differently.
Right.
So it's, would it be something, I mean, does that happen in the sheep world and other breeds or something that it's like where you wouldn't want to flush them maybe because you want to get that single first or you just want to push it? And
That's a really good point.
Everybody's different, I assume.
You know, I haven't done it. I was talking with a veterinary friend of mine the other day and she said, yeah, obviously you don't want to flush ewe lambs when you're flushing your mature ewes. And that, like, never even clicked on to me before she'd said it. I've always just left ewe lambs in because I'm thinking, well, I want, you know, they're still growing. I want them to get that extra jump, too. But I don't want ewe lambs given twins. So I think this year, and that's I made a note of it in my management book, that when it comes time to flush the mature ewes, I'll be pulling out the ewe lambs that I plan to breed, and just keeping them on, you know, their normal
some old nasty brush,
yeah, goat
in
hay
in a dirt paddock, yeah.
So
that would be healthy for them.
right.
That was a joke.
Yeah. Something else you said there though. Oh, some of those same friends, that same veterinary friend, and another person I know. They have started not exposing ewe lambs at 7-8 months to a ram, instead carrying them for, you know, if you want to stick with only springtime lambing, you're going to carry it a whole extra year before you start getting a return from it.
Now, do people lamb in the fall?
Yes. So... sheep are, this breed anyway, it's typically a seasonal breeding animal. And a lot of times they'll stop cycling naturally.
Okay.
After kind of the beginning of the year. Now, again, we get back into getting inside the sheep's biology or whatever.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, like a cedar. Are you familiar with a cedar unit?
No.
So, picture... kind of like the wishbone on a turkey.
Okay.
Kind of like that. It's an implanted device that you're actually putting inside the sheep's vulva.
Okay.
That stops them from cycling. And a lot of confinement, people, confinement or not, will do this when they want to lamb heavily all at once, a real tight window.
Okay.
So
to like sink all the ewes up, basically.
Yeah. So they're pressing pause on their cycling and then they go in whenever they're ready and pull the cedar device out. And I think they say it's somewhere about 24 to 48 hours after removing it, they're all starting to mainly come in kind of at once.
Okay.
But which is great, but on the flip side of it, you talk about a lambing hurricane.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. But and these are probably like, if you're putting that much management into it, you probably have a lot of animals on the farm.
I mean,
a lot of head.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it would be a, but I guess that would work too. Like if you got, you know, you lose, you know, you could. You need like foster animals over and different because you get them all there so
you
close
definitely
in age.
Have a better opportunity to graft lambs that might be an orphan or multiples. Hmm. You know, put a triplet lamb onto a ewe that had a single or something.
Yeah, you'd have to schedule a vacation from work that during that window.
Yeah,
I'd be like 24/7.
And you know, cedars are. I've got mixed emotions about them. I mean, I see a lot of people using them, and a lady I follow on YouTube uses them. And it's a way to get ewes to breed at a season that they normally wouldn't.
Okay.
And I'm debating about doing it, because I've got half a dozen, 6 to 10 ewes that, you know, they were either too young to breed back in the fall, mm-hmm. or one that bred but didn't catch, one ewe that lost both lambs, whatever, you know, a random group. I'm like, do I want to just let them hang out for a year?
Yeah.
Because that's, looking at it from a business standpoint.
Yeah.
It's money I'll be spending to get them another year.
Oh, yeah.
Or do I try, so you don't have to use the cedars. Do I just try to throw them with a ram here in a month or so to try to get a few fall lambs out of it? It'll be a lower success rate. But
even then you've got to, like, you're still going to lose that time at some point, though, right? Because yeah. If later you wanted to sync them up your other.
And yeah. There is an appeal, and my wife actually brought it up a couple weeks ago. She said, well, yeah, why don't you put them in with a ram, and then you can have a little group this fall? And I guess technically then you could just start, you know, if you have ewe lambs that are a little too young to put with a ram, instead of carrying them for a whole nother year,
you could
maybe you just carry them 5 extra months.
Yeah.
And so you're always going to have then 2 lambings a year. Not a bad idea.
Yeah, and from a, you know, meat production perspective,
right,
you're going to have lambs that are going to be a lot bigger
yep.
earlier in the season, and you can finish them out on that really good grass right. in the spring and
right.
boom, right in.
So I'm thinking about doing it this spring, but like I said, I got mixed emotions about the cedars because, like, we're this regenerative,
yeah, it's natural.
Kind of goes against, it's kind of it's against.
Little, mm-hmm. yeah. yeah, I get it.
And
yeah.
there's a market out there for what people are considering natural fall breeding genetics or natural fall lambing genetics.
Okay.
So it's kind of, you know, somebody's in an accelerated lambing system or something, you can get these sheep to have. To do 3 lambings in 2 years, but it's work in an animal.
Yeah.
So you're shortening its production span in the long term, but
makes, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, lambing comes around, and some people lamb on pasture. I typically shoot to lamb, in February. So a lot of times there's snow on the ground. And at that time, like, the lambs are hardy. I've had them have them in snowstorms mm-hmm. and no issues whatsoever. They get up, very vigorous lambs that get to nursing right away. And the maternal instincts of the ewes are something we select for. So they're really quick to bat about getting the lambs up and getting them dry. But I've paid enough for these good genetics, and I've got enough time in that I want to kind of give the animal every chance it can.
Yeah.
So my ewes in the winter do have access to my barn. That's where their round bales of hay are. Most of the time, they'll lamb in the barn. Every now and then, they're out on pasture. But once they're dropping, animals come in. I have what they call lambing jugs that I built out of, it's like some Amish lumber that are just rough cut 1x4s.
Mm-hmm.
I built them about 36, 34 inches tall so I can step over them without too much trouble.
Yeah, makes sense.
And put like those eye screws, eye bolts in the ends of them so that I can just take steel round push rods for quick connect.
Yeah, it works really, really well.
Yeah, so those panels are 5 foot long, and I just assemble them on one side of the barn wall, and they all kind of lock together. So I put a ewe in there with her lambs for 3 days is preferable. That lets mom bond to the lambs, lambs bond to mom, make sure they get, you know, gain them weight and figuring all that out, and then I tag them on the day that I let them out back into, like, the nursery area.
And it's, maybe you said this and I just didn't pick up on it, but like, you're taking, they're all together when, like, are you putting the ewe in there when you know it's like time? Or
so, I've tried it in the past. I think you can cause a little extra stress on the ewe by separating her from the
that
group.
That would be my assumption, yeah, because yeah. they don't want to be by themselves or a herd animal.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Now, I have some ewes that have some personalities that don't mind being away from the group.
Okay.
And if it's someone like that, and I see, you know, discharge or a hoof starting to stick out of the lamb,
yeah.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and throw you. That way, she's not dealing with whether it's the potential of another ewe stealing her lambs or, you know, it's out in that big area. Somebody could get stepped on or
yeah.
You know, anything could happen, okay. Really.
Yeah.
We had a first this year. I got a call at work one day from my oldest daughter who was homesick, and she went down to do a barn check for me, and it was the first lambs of the season. And while she was having one, she laid down immediately to have her second, when another ewe that we didn't know at the time, but she was in early stages of labor, she came over and was trying to steal the first one. So she started cleaning it, talking to it, kind of throwing a wrench in the whole equation. So while mom's having lamb number two, she's also trying to talk to the first one and keep it around, and that other stealer ewe was making it difficult. Gwenny went down to, I said, well, just go put the mama and the lambs in a jug, and that'll get the problem solved.
Yeah.
So she goes down, and the ewe that was trying to steal is the wildest sheep that I have. Borderline psychotic.
Yeah.
Gwenny said this ewe starts headbutting her, like backing up three or four steps and just charging at her.
Oh, my.
Which, I mean, it's a ewe. It's not as dangerous as a ram.
Still.
But, yeah, she was pushing her around. Hormones are doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, on the bright side of it, she wants to be a mom really bad. That ewe does.
Yeah.
Can't fault her at that. And then, yeah, by the time I got home from work, Gwenny had them pinned up, and I went and checked everybody else. That other ewe had had her lamb. So she knew something was coming.
She was happy.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't do these lambing jugs, and they'll just leave them out on pasture or a big barn, shed, run-in, whatever. This helps prevent mismothering to an extent.
Okay.
But you still have instances. We did a barn check one morning where I went down and there was four wet lambs in a group, and one ewe licking a couple, and this ewe licking one. I'm going, okay, I'm trying to play detective here.
Yeah.
You can't go on looks because Katahdin's,
it's just
no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
Color pattern. So, but
yeah.
These were both 2-year-old ewes. One ewe was wanting three of them, and the other ewe was wanting one. And I don't have a math degree or anything, but back to the whole two spigots deal.
It's not going to, math is.
Yeah, the sheep math was
not fair.
Math.
they would say.
Yeah. So I grafted one of the three onto the second one. And it involved, again, getting inside the mind of the animal, taking some of the cleanings, the afterbirth, from the lamb she really, really liked, rubbing it all over the one to get her to clean it more, and it smelled like the lamb she loved. I even took some of her colostrum, because up in that little crevice that her udder is in, you know, there's like a gland up in there too that's her smell. I took some of her colostrum, milked it out into my hand, and rubbed it all over that lamb's face. And then just put it up there. And she took it really, really, really well.
Nice. And you don't know if that was hers or not, but it probably was.
Right. I mean, so what happened? I mean, if that one ewe had all three of them, then she had over 31 pounds, 32 pounds of lamb inside of her.
And she probably weighs, what, 120? Yeah.
That's her normal walking around weight. So she was over 150 if that was the case?
Yeah.
So, but what we're going to do, and being part of that NSIP program, I have this, it's like an ear tag type deal, but it's a, think of like a 3-hole punch, mm-hmm. but 1 hole. So a 1-hole punch.
Okay. Yeah, hole punch.
Yeah.
A little handheld one.
So it's a little deal that I think I've actually talked about it on here before. The thing is called a TSU, a tissue sample unit, and it's got that special deal. You put this little vial in it that's just got a little hole punch cutter on it. And when you think typical, so think of the hole on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's a quarter of that size.
Okay.
That it just punches a hole in its ear and seals this little tube that it puts the sample in with a preservative fluid.
Okay.
And I'm able to send, so you do that on, you can do it on the sires, you can do it on the dams, the lambs, and then send it in.
Yeah.
They look at all the DNA strands and go, okay, well, you said you thought it was from this sire and this mother, but it's actually from this sire and that mother. Uh-huh. So it really lets you line it out. And with NSIP and all their EBVs, their estimated breeding values, they've linked up with these tissue sample units to strengthen the accuracy of your predictability of the animal's like breeding characteristics. Okay. And weight gain characteristics, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's putting science into it. Now, if you're an operation that's only doing commercial animals, like if all of my lambs were coming directly to your farm for meat, it doesn't matter who the sire is.
Right.
You know, they all basically taste the same.
Yeah.
From a food standpoint.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But from a breeding you know, most of my ewe lambs and a few of my select ram lambs are hopeful to go to a breeding farm, and I need to, for registration purposes and for NSIP purposes, I need to be able to link those up in the system.
Right, right.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do I have here? While you've got pregnant ewes, in the wintertime, usually you're going to have to go on a hay ration. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of train of thought. I think I've talked to you some this year and last. You've heard me complain about, I've bought hay from several sources, and I'm looking for the best bang for the buck. But a college friend of mine told me, good hay ain't cheap, and cheap hay ain't good.
And makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get it as a tattoo.
Yeah.
No, but it's a legit thing. And, I mean, I've had hay brought in that looks good on the outside. They eat a layer off of it, and then there's just mold. It's all matted together. And, I mean, even if your animal will eat it, what are you putting in their system at that point? Mm-hmm. Do you want to do that? A lot of times they don't want to eat it. So then you're just throwing it out, wasting money. So there's some people out there that get their hay tested, and I'm actually working with my veterinarian. That,
it was like a topic of discussion. That's a big, that grazing conference. Okay. That you're all talking about that. I mean, like anyone who is on a scale that, it was really common before getting their hay, or like, you know, they talk about soil tests all the time too, obviously, but most of the farmers were like, yeah, you know, you want to know what you're feeding these animals.
Sure.
That's the quality stuff. You just can't tell by looking at it.
Right. Yeah. Cause sometimes. I mean, with sheep specifically, as opposed to cattle, well, and prolapses happen in cattle too. We heard Ryan talk about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But with sheep, I mean, if she's putting 2 or 3 lambs and carrying them, her nutritional requirements are at a certain level just for her, let alone the increased load she's got to supply for. So she's got to be eating basically all day.
Yeah.
And if she's something, I mean, something in her body, her mind is telling her to keep eating because you're not full yet, but her stomach's full, and that's when you have prolapses.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because she's overeating to get the
nutritional.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's exactly. That was like one of the things that came up. Well, I'm going to end up. This is not going to be accurate, but it's going to be correct. So, somebody asked about like free choice minerals versus, you know, like a block.
Okay.
So like, you know, all the, like a salad bar of minerals where they can just lick.
Yeah.
They're like, would you recommend that? And he's like, well, no, probably not. He's like, you probably don't need that. He's like, but, you know, get your soil tested, get your forage tested, know what's in your, what the animals are eating, and if you're lacking something, add that as a separate thing.
Yeah.
Like, just don't.
Well,
like, it's probably going to be cost prohibitive to put all these things because they're never going to, you know, they're not that intelligent.
Right. Exactly.
That was his argument. So exactly. It's like they're going to eat the things that taste good and ignore other ones. But he said sometimes, you know, they could be whatever, like, I think he used coppers and things. They were talking, I think they're talking about cattle, but I can't remember now. But it was like, they knew they were deficient on that ranch and that forage was deficient. So they just like had the feed, but they were going through so much mineral.
Yeah.
Cause they like the animals were just constantly at the mineral and they, so they figured out that's what it was. So they put that separately.
Okay.
And their mineral intake went down and they just started eating that other also.
Okay.
So it was, yeah.
Well, and not all mineral is made the same. Some of them have a much higher, like, grain byproduct or, like, an actual feed component to them.
Okay.
So animals will eat a lot more of those types of minerals.
Yeah.
Versus one that, I know a lot of people that use Premier One cells, like a sheep mineral trace mineral premix, and you add this little bag to a 50-pound bag of salt from your farm store. So, I mean, it's super salty, and they're not going to overeat it. But, you know, the question I've had for the last couple of years is, well, how do I know? I've got animals, some of them, most of them look really good. There's a couple that here and there that, you know, fall a little short of the overall appearance.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is when you have one butchered, you need to get, I think it's a sample of its liver.
Okay.
And you can send it into a lab for testing. And you can see then, I guess technically if you're big enough and maybe in the boat we are where you're, not that we're big, but like you're selling meat on a regular basis. So you've got to have animals butchered different times of the year.
Yeah.
So I could see and compare results of that from an animal butchered in the spring, the summer, the fall, because, you know, they're eating different things at different times of the year, too. So, but yeah, a lot of people are testing hay now. And I'd started to say, I'm starting to talk with my veterinarian and another friend, and we're going to look for a couple more local people to maybe source some quality hay.
Yeah.
Like really good quality hay out of Ohio or something. That is tested, that I don't have to worry about, you know, sheep either aren't getting good enough nutrients from it or it's too stemmy, they're not wanting to eat it.
Yeah.
And then I'm turning half of a round bale into bedding.
Yeah. Or like what, you know, what kind of, what have they, you know, done, like where is it coming from, what's in it, are you bringing in all these,
how are they
seeds?
Treating their field,
well, you get like weeds and stuff coming into your farm from that hay,
or
what are they spraying on it, is it, you know, are they,
it's
going by that thing of like, well, you know, I mean, most people are going to fertilize their hay meadows, but like, are they, you know, saying, oh well, it needs five, whatever the multiplier is, I'll just put 15 because that'll be better.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of those situations. Like, who knows? I don't know.
That's what Will Harris said with the
whole... Yeah, that's where I got from. But,
if the dosage said 2 cc's, I use that as a starting point.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you getting it from somebody like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's something, I mean, because that's a little bit like, you know, it's out of our control.
Sure.
It can be, unless you're doing it all yourself. But
and I think a lot of those guys in that area where they're growing crops to sell are already familiar with and used to getting their stuff sampled and tested.
Yeah.
So they're going to have results on it. And if not, I think, I would hope the vast majority of them would be open to you requesting it. And maybe it's something where you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
But if I'm paying premium money for premium hay.
Yeah.
I mean, what's another $40 for a forage test?
I mean, you don't want somebody just telling you it's premium.
Yeah. I've had that happen.
I mean, because that's the only other thing you'd have to go on without it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's paper.
Looks are very deceiving. So, okay, well, back on the lamb thing.
Oh,
so,
yeah, I forgot what we were talking about. Yeah.
Sidetracked. So, okay, lambs are coming out of the jug. You know, nursing. They don't have a developed rumen at this point. So, they're really basically just only taking in milk for the first 10 days.
Okay.
Really. You'll see one every now and then put a little piece of hay in its mouth and play around with it or some blades of grass, but they're not doing anything with it yet.
Yeah.
But I have always in the past, I've creep fed my lambs because with Katahdin sheep specifically, there's a growth, a time frame. Early on, these things, and you've seen it on visits to my place, I'm assuming, or when they come up to yours, during the first 3 months of a Katahdin's life, they're growing at an insanely fast rate.
It's unreal, yeah.
Like my oldest lamb right now, what's he, 6, 5 weeks old, something like that. And I bet it's already pushing 40 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, there's been times you've sent me pictures right before they're ready to come up, and I'm like, I don't know which ones are the ewes and which are the lambs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want to ask.
Maybe
I should be able to tell.
At weaning age, some of those ram lambs, especially if it's a single, my goodness, they are the size of their mothers already.
Yeah, it's crazy. Or at least, you know, in a picture, they look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I feed them creep feed. Like I said on another podcast in the past, I'm thinking about maybe trying to get away from it and really selecting for genetics that grow fast without it. But I'm still in the deciding phase of that. But a creep feed, by nature, it needs to be something very palatable for young lambs and soft mouths, and so you know there's these mini pellets out there. They don't have to be complicated. It can be cracked corn, soybean meal, you know, some molasses in there, to sweeten it up or as a binding agent. You know, they make packaged product from some of the big feed companies. We do a kind of a custom mix, typically speaking, that just, it's a little cheaper that way. And it's oftentimes more of a local product than just having the big brand name, whatever on it. But they're given this feed.
Well, it's fresher too, usually.
Yeah.
Buy stuff that's if it's in a bag that's got colored printing on it, it's old.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
And how much you paid for it, it's old at that point. I mean, by the time it makes it to you.
That's right.
If you, depending on where, I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
You never go to a farm that is growing pellets.
Right.
Right. So it's got to be changed into that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
But I make this creep feed available to them basically from the time of birth. I mean, you technically have a week or two, but in an area that lambs can get to. So, you know, I've got a creep gate, one that I made, and then I've got another creep feeder that's got its own limiting doors on it. And what it is, it limits, you need to limit the height and the width of animals that can get into it. So they're given unrestricted access to it, so they can eat as much as they want. And if you do that from the time the lamb's born, they're not going to overeat. gorge themselves and just die.
Yeah.
But if you wait and start introducing feed when a lamb is 2 months old, 3 months old, whatever, and just go, oh, well, he's still wanting more. I'm going to pour more out for him here. Oh, he's still hungry. You will kill your sheep.
Really?
Like rumen acidosis is the technical term for it. We had a little, it happened 1 year. I didn't lose the sheep, thankfully, but one of my kids forgot to close the barn door, and the sheep were in that paddock. And I came home and just saw it open. Oh, no. And I run down there, and there's just a manure pile coming out of the barn door. And they'd eaten a group of probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 ewes, had gone through a 50-pound bag of feed, plus some.
Wow.
And all of them seemed to be okay except for one. It was a day or two later, and I had a ewe with a pair of twins on her that were only 2 weeks old. And I talked to my vet, and he said, "It probably going to lose her. Like, rumen acidosis is tough to pull out of." I forget how we treated it. I've got it written down in my record book, but she made it. But anyway, so yeah, lambs are eating creep, unrestricted. They're not getting too much of it. Now, at a certain point, I think I typically do it around 60 to 75 days of age. I take them off of unrestricted, and I start, you know, restricting, giving them a smaller amount, because at that point, they don't need to eat an unlimited amount because they can only convert it so fast. And it's just going to cost you more.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, and mainly when animals are coming to your place for market, you know, you're switching them onto a full grass-fed, which is what I'm switching them onto, too, after weaning. So they've got to start getting tapered down anyway, and you can't just stop them cold turkey.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk and stuff, and I, you know, it's a different feed that they get, but I'll, you know, give them a little more when they get there, and by the time they're leaving, it's enough that they still know what it is to get them in the trailer. And now I'm probably going to change that this year to just taper them off and be off of it.
Yeah.
Well, and something different, but
even if you use something like alfalfa pellets that you can wet down a little bit so they don't choke on them, I mean, I can't stress to people, there's something valuable, very valuable, when you need to move animals or catch animals, about them knowing what the feed bucket sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
With feed in it.
And there are lots of things out there that you can use.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So we talk about weaning age. Some people will wean right at 60 days. A good buddy of mine over at Redbrush Ranch, Devin, just sold, you know, their first group of lambs that were about 60 days old right there before that Easter market. Like the week before the Easter market is when he's able to, you know, get good market prices for those commercial sheep. I will typically, I leave them on, I start pulling ram lambs off at 90 days old because they're getting frisky by 90 days old, and you don't want any oopsie lambs if somebody is cycling from a three-month-old ram lamb, which, if you're not familiar with sheep, might seem not truthful, but these ram lambs, somewhere between 90 and 120 days of age, are becoming fertile and potent.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was because they grow so fast and they're maturing,
I've seen ram lambs that are a week or two old playing around in the barn riding other lambs. Like it's crazy. But so yeah, the ram lambs I wean at 90 days, and then the ewe lambs, the ones that I'm keeping as replacements, I just let their mamas wean them in the pasture on their own.
Okay.
They kind of kick them off. And then ones that I sell to other breeding homes, you know.
Just wean as they go.
Yep. Yeah. And that helps with, you know, if you do a mass event where you're weaning a big group at one time, particularly if a ewe has twins on her and they're both rams and they're both coming to your place.
Yeah.
I pull ewes like that in and put them on a lower quality hay and water to dry them off so that we don't have an increased risk of mastitis.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, it can be involved. Or you can make it not involved. And I'm just choosing to manage on a little bit more of a involved, in-depth scale.
Yeah. Well, there's like, I mean, we talk often about it, and we've been getting lambs from you for a while, and there's things that we've talked about today that I was like, oh, I didn't have a clue about that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, what's like, so when like the actual, you know, when you're sitting there and it's like, okay, I'm looking at my calendar and there's lambs coming any day. Like, what do you have in your lamb go bag that's like the things I need?
Okay.
When I go down to check if there's going to be lambs on the ground.
Right.
Like, do you?
Yeah.
I mean, I assume there's some things that you want to have on hand at that point.
You do. And that's a great question. I should have made some notes of it. But I'll go off the top of my head because it's still pretty fresh in my memory. So one is gloves, good clean gloves. And I'll specify that even more. After year one of lambing, I learned that medical gloves themselves are not enough.
Mm.
After you pull a couple of lambs, you realize that you want some of those OB shoulder length sleeves.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you go past your wrist.
Gotcha.
And then you're like, crap, why am I even wearing a glove
now? Yeah, because
then
it's just inside your glove.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little.
So,
yeah.
What I do, I keep regular medical gloves and the shoulder length gauntlet type deal. I pull the shoulder one on first, and then I put the medical glove over top of it, and that constricts it all nice and well on your fingers.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hot tip for carrying those when you're deer hunting.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to get all nasty when you're gutting a deer.
That's right.
You can glove up that same way.
That's right.
My dad used to get them from my uncle because you couldn't find them in stores, the shoulder length gloves. But he had them from, you know, preg checking cows and stuff. So he'd always have them on hand from wherever he got them from. But
You need good gloves in the event that you are going to have to assist with a delivery. I mean, there's limited real estate back there to work on a small animal. And I mean, I'm a guy I don't have huge hands, but I also don't have little baby hands either. Yeah. So you need a good lube, you know, medical grade lube. The one I have has some antiseptic and stuff on it to help sanitize. Premier One sells it. I think it's called Super Lube or something. So that, in case you have to go in to assist. They sell, I think they call them lamb snares or something. And it's basically just a sling device that if you are pulling lambs and you're having trouble manipulating the lamb into place, you can put these two little rope ends or cabled ends on the lamb's hooves to hold them in place while you're positioning the head. So normal presentation of a lamb being born, if you've got a sheep standing facing away from you, you're behind the sheep looking at it, you should see a lamb coming out that looks like it's going to be diving into a pool.
With like feet and nose.
Yep.
Okay.
Front feet, you know, faced the right direction. And then its head will most often be right between those front legs, just like it's diving out. So most of the time they can deliver those on their own, no problem. You got your gloves, you got your lube, you've got, you need some sort of like an iodine. Some people use the little spray bottles they'll spray, it's for treating the umbilical cord area.
Now is that like, do you have to cut that off or anything? Or does it just kind of fall off or you let it happen?
It will, the iodine will help dry it up quickly. and it usually stays on the lamb for a couple weeks.
Okay.
And then falls off on its own. There are instances, you see some that barely have any type of a cord on them at all. And then you have some that they're dragging the ground. In some of those cases, you can trim them a little bit. You have to watch that they don't bleed. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, you can spray that cord. I use these little bottles, and I'll just pour some fresh iodine in it. My wife's big into those essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get this particular one. It comes in this little pill bottle type deal that fits well in my Carhartt pocket bibs.
Yeah.
So I'll just pour it full, and it cups the cup of it. It's like the old film canister size, and it fits perfectly over that umbilical. All
right. So film canister, if you're a younger listener, when as a child of the 80s and 90s, growing up, your parents or other people would have picture. They would take pictures with a camera,
not their phone.
You had to put film into this camera,
and then take it to the store
to get it developed.
Yeah,
and if you never got to see the picture until it came back, but anyway. That film came in a little round, probably like an inch and a quarter round or something, maybe, and like 2.5 inches tall or something, maybe.
Something like that.
A little plastic container with a lid that snapped on top of it. Those, handiest things ever.
They were. And they'd be perfect to still have.
Yeah.
But I think everyone on the planet has disappeared.
Yeah, I haven't seen one in years. Like, I remember there was a drawer at my mom and dad's house. Still the drawer. There might be some in there, actually, but...
Yeah.
That you'd open up and you'd be like, what? It's like those jokes you see them sometimes where people are like, you know, going to country folk refrigerator and open it up and it's like, all right, which one is actually the country crock butter? Is it this one? Nope, that's leftovers from last night. Oh, no, that's something. It's like everybody using the butter
Cool Whip container with applesause in it.
So it's kind of the same thing. Like you pop them open, and I remember they had one that had thumbtacks in it because, you know, you're a kid, you're hanging stuff up on your wall. Yeah. You need thumbtacks. So
that's funny.
You'd open one up like, no, that one's got screws in it. No, that's not it. Or that, one, you know, whatever. Like, so, yes, I know what a film can
do. Okay. But I use those, some little bottle to dip the navel to dry it out. And that just helps seal it up, keep infection, a lamb from getting an infection through its navel while it's in there laying in the barn, whatever. So good fresh bedding is important as well, keeping that out. Let's see, you need your identification system, so you need an ear tagger with some tags so that you can, I mean, if you only have 3 sheep and they're lambing, you're going to know them well enough to be able to go, okay, you belong to you. Maybe you don't want tags for animals staying on your place, but by law, when they leave your farm, lambs have to be attached with a tag with your scrapie number on it, supplied by the state. So I've got my scrapie number on my tags, and my farm identification numbers for my records and everything.
And then they just, your tags, I can't remember, they have like a printed number printed on them.
Yeah.
You're not like writing a number on. And
so they do both. And they make special markers now that are pretty fade resistant.
Okay.
But I have mine pre-printed. Like my tags, for example, at Winnow Glen Farm, my tags will say WGF. And then it'll say, this year, they'll say 24, and that's the year that we lambed. And then the tags start at 01 and go all the way till we get done. And then I just put them all in. I've got a program on my iPad and my phone called Herd Boss. And that's got all my data records.
I have to get an affiliate link for that.
Put it on
our podcast.
Right?
Notes.
They cut me a break on my annual price tag for it.
Yeah.
Just for record keeping, you need a lambing book, which I have it also.
Oh, yeah.
Microphone. Nice. Can you see that? And it just lists, you list your lamb, the date it was born, sex of the lamb, who the mother is, who the sire is, birth type, whether it was a single, twin, triplet, whatever, birth weight,
nice,
and comment section, all that stuff. So record keeping is important.
That's like the biggest So even when we had the rabbits, that was the only thing we ever had bred on the farm.
Okay.
And the record keeping of it, I love the idea of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just terrible at it.
Yeah.
And I don't enjoy doing it. But I think like, oh yeah, I'll write this down. And I do the same thing now with all the other stuff. Okay. Like, I'm going to hang a calendar in the garage and I'm going to write down like every day, you know, what I did and this and that, or like whatever. And then eventually you're like, this is too much and it's not sustainable. But even with like, you know, we're getting chicks this week and it's like, I should write down like, you know, because here's the sad reality of getting chicks. You're going to lose some chicks in early on.
Sure.
So you write down like, oh, one today, you know, one today. Then you would know your death losses and things like that. But I start strong every year, but so it's like that's the part of when I think about lambing, it's like that book makes me scared.
I'd
be like, I'll never do that.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what scared me. I lost my one that I've used the last 3 years.
Mm.
And if I didn't have all of it in this software, I'd be in trouble.
Oh, wow.
But so, yeah, put them in a place and keep copies.
Maybe
or
snap a picture. Take of pictures. That page every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
But the new iPhone lookup thing, too, like where you can find any picture, you know, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Because
So, I what I find is times, like yesterday, I had a little window of time and I realized I had stopped putting them into my app on the iPad around lamb number 24.
Mm, and you're like 40.
And I was like, oh, there's 16 plus lambs that need to go in here. So I got the rest of those entered and everything's synced up now.
That's good.
Which final tabulation? Final count of lambs.
The final countdown.
Of Winnow Glen Farms 2024 spring lambing. 42 lambs born total. Wow. I was shooting for 40.
Yeah.
Hit 42. But on the farm, there are 35.
Okay.
So we lost 4, which not happy about that.
No.
And it's not a great percentage. We'll talk about situational stuff and how to make culling decisions in the future. But, so out of the 35 on the farm, there's 20 ewes, 15 rams.
Yeah.
So.
20. Okay.
Yeah. So there's going to be at least 10.
Okay.
That I'll have for you, probably closer to 12.
Okay.
I got a couple people to get a hold of who've already reached out about ram lamb for breeding prospects.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to consign a couple.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, we need to touch on that another time about what you're thinking about consigning them to. That's a pretty neat thing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's other than that in the kit, I mean, you need to have like pain medicine for the ewes for a hard birth. You need to have
5-hour energy for you.
Yeah.
Don't recommend those.
No. Coffee only. antibiotics. I mean, if you do have to go and do an internal exam on a ewe, even if you're being as clean as you can, you should really consider maybe giving that animal a shot of an antibiotic because you're introducing stuff into the inside of them. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to get sick while they're now needing to raise other lives.
Yeah, makes sense.
And that's something, you know, we have a vet come out to the farm once a year to do our annual herd check. And here's a term a lot of people haven't heard of, a VCPR.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard of this until I went to the grazing conference.
Yeah. Okay. You remember what it stands for?
Vet client something relationship.
Patient.
Good job. Vet.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't remember the acronym as I was saying it.
That's something you need.
Thing.
Yeah. If you know, your vet can work with you and they visit your farm on a regular enough basis to do herd checks and everything, some medications they're actually able to prescribe to you and they can maybe have them drop shipped directly. So you might not have to have every time you need something, you might not have to have the vet run out, which is an increased you know, cost and all that stuff.
Cost. Yeah.
So through that, I mean, and we can work on like what medicines do you need around just on a random day at the farm. That can be a little subtopic, but that's pretty much it. I don't go too crazy. Prolapse harnesses, I guess I should cover real quick. If you do have a ewe that's prolapsing before birth, they make harnesses and what they call prolapse spoons.
Mm-hmm.
And the prolapse spoon, think of like a rounded W-shaped. Think of the McDonald's arch
mm-hmm.
upside down.
Okay.
But the middle part of it's a little bit wider.
Okay.
And you would actually insert that into the ewe after you've cleaned the prolapse completely and got it back in, which I am not going to tell you how to do that.
Google it.
Yeah. Watch out for the safe image search. But that spoon helps hold that in. I tie ends on the ends of the strings on the outside legs of that W and connect it to a prolapse harness that runs down the animal's back. One part of it goes around her neck like a collar.
Okay.
Strap that comes down her back and two straps that come kind of around under her tail up inside of each back leg and snap into the piece on her back. And I connect the spoon to that. And gotcha. Those devices are all designed for the ewe to be able to have her lambs through them.
Oh.
So yeah, I've had to use them before and come down and use cleaning off twins or whatever. And you know, the spoon pops out.
Okay.
And it's just hanging there at that point.
Huh.
But you definitely want to have those on hand. It's not a thing that you want to wait until you need it, because then it's too late.
Yeah, because where are you going to, I mean, where do you even get something like that? They have them at, like,
I don't
stores?
No, I've never seen one at, like, a Tractor Supply, Rural King, Southern States.
Yeah, I've been in those stores a lot, and I never.
Yeah. Premier One sells them, I believe. I get them from,
probably, like, Valley Vet. That's just different online things, yep. Yeah.
But other than that, if there's something that maybe people are listening to this and they have further questions about lambing, I will gladly try to field those and get them answered, whether it's an email or another episode. But that's kind of a recap of lambing and how to approach it and how we do it. I talked a lot.
You did. I feel like I had a vacation this morning from talking.
I feel like I need a gallon of water.
Well, I'll go ahead and wrap us up then for the podcast. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you have questions, like Cody said, reach out. He'll be happy to answer them, and I will not, because I don't know anything about this. you know, find us on the socials at Appalachian Farmcast. We're on Facebook, on Instagram at Appalachian_Farmcast. That email is AppalachianFarmcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's nowhere else to find us, I don't think. So.
You know what I was thinking? I didn't run this by you at all.
Okay.
Is the music playing on here?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what we should do? We should do a little bit of a giveaway.
Yes. Okay.
And one thing we have that we could give away, Ryan's shirts.
Oh.
I don't know if he's still got them.
But
we've been wearing them. We'll have to get a hold of him.
That man sizes that would fit me, so I don't have one. But
I equipped everybody in the family at my house with them, and everybody loves them. They're super comfy. I'm going to
quality shirts.
I'm going to reach out to him and see if he can hook us up with a couple, and we'll pay for shipping or something.
Yeah,
maybe paying for the shirts. But if you're liking the podcast, here's your challenge. Shoot us an email or leave us something on Instagram. Tell us that and spread the word. Tell some people about the podcast.
Yes, tell your friends to subscribe. Yeah, because the more downloads we get, the more it gets out there.
Yes, and we'll pick one of these comments or something and send some goodies too.
Yeah, maybe we should just make our own shirts too.
We'll do that.
Point.
We'll do that too.
Not today, but
all right. I'm Cody Brabham, Winnow Glen Farm. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Tyler Rice from Pike Mountain Farm. Yes, also thanks.